Accession number 31693, Reel 3.
Mr. Robson, Reel 3. You were telling us, tell me about the barrack room situation. Mm-hmm. Could you continue?
Yeah, I mean, we weren't given any equipment or any cleaning gear to keep this place clean. It had to come out of our wages. We all had to put so much in the middle to buy the red polish for the canvas. We used to have to use our own polish to polish these 1-inch lats all the way down, and also the potbelly stoves were also actually used with boot polish and shone up. Even the pipe that used to go through the ceiling, that had to be polished as well. And on a Saturday morning, before we actually went and had the cross-country run, we used to have an inspection. And my officer was a national serviceman. He was a solicitor from Wulsenham.
Do you remember his name?
I can't remember his name. But the Lance Corporal I had was a national serviceman called Lance Corporal Rollo. And I remember him coming in with platoon sergeant, Sergeant Carr, the officer. And as I said, I used to be the first bed on the left-hand side. And as they came in, they always used to turn left, and my bed was always the first one to be inspected. At that time, my weapon was good. No problem. We used to have the old 38 equipment weapon. And again, all blankoed, very nice. And again, in those days, until you left training, you could clean it, but you couldn't shine it. I.e. the weapon itself. It wasn't until after you left training you were allowed to buff it up and make it shine. In those days you weren't allowed to. So no problem until I came to my boots. I never was very good at bulling my boots. And the first request I can remember distinctly was open the window, because I had a window right next to my bed space. And I opened the window and my boots went outside, thrown out. I can't remember who threw them out, whether it was Lance Corporal Rollo, Sergeant Carr or the platoon commander, but needless to say, the boots were in a worse state than when they were before they went out the window. And that happened, I think, for the first 4 weeks of my training. But it was character building.
I was going to say, you must have found it somewhat upsetting to have that happen.
Yes, it was really, because I thought my boots were all right. I mean, they were coming on, but I must admit, by the end of my training, my boots were good, because at that time, anybody who was having difficulty with any fears of the cleaning your kit, ironing or anything like that, we used to muck in.
You all helped each other.
We all helped each other. One of the things, because I'd been in the Army Cadets, which was as a help, was I used to do all the ironing for the uniforms. If anybody was having difficulty with the iron, I used to iron their equipment, and we all used to muck in. That was a big, and if anybody, when we go on about bullying, if anybody actually went below a certain standard, we used to step in and we used to say to them, look, if you can't come up with standard, we'll help you out, but you've got to do it, you've got to help yourself out as well. And I can remember little Willie Spaulding. He was about 27-year-old. Again, I was only 18. And he used to like his beard, little Willie. And he would go to the Naffy, and nearly every night he'd come back drunk. And we used to get his gear together, and we used to actually clear it all for him. We got to the stage where we weren't prepared to do it anymore. So what we did, we waited, got drunk one night, and we took him out, still asleep, drunk and stupor, and carried him about midnight with his bed and all his equipment, and we put him in the middle of the square.
That would not go down well, I suppose.
It didn't indeed, but he got the message. And after that, he started to tore the line. I mean, the poor man's dead now, but he's, you know, I met him again years and years later when I did my drill course at Winchester. And he was in stores there, still a private soldier. Poor lad.
You mentioned the iron. Was that an issued iron per hood?
It wasn't a steam iron. It was just an ordinary iron, electric iron, which were absolutely hopeless. How it lasted so long, I do not know. But if anybody broke it, you had to pay for a replacement. You never got anything for free apart from the initial issue, and after that you paid for everything. If a pane of glass was broken, you paid for it.
Did you pay for, or did they take so much out of your wage as barragram damage?
Barragram damages.
Irrespective of whether there was damages or not.
Irrespective of whether there was damages or not, you still paid. You still paid for barragram damages. You couldn't argue about it. And every Friday, you marched in for your pay, and it was all written out. You signed it, and you saluted.
How much were you getting initially?
Initially, I was getting £5.10, which was a lot of money in those days. Because the National Servicemen who didn't have any ties, they were on 21 shillings. Those who had ties, depending on how much they were sending home, anything from 5 shillings to 17 and sixpence. And out of that, they had to buy all the equipment. And going back to equipment and that, you had to buy your own razor blades. And at that time, I never used to shave because I didn't have any hair on my face. And I can remember being on parade and Sergeant Carr coming along saying, "Have you had a shave this morning?" And me saying, "No, because I don't shave." Wrong answer. I didn't get charged. But I was taken away and shown how to use a razor blade and razor. And if I remember rightly, it was called, the razor was in three pieces, one, two, three pieces. And it was an issue razor. And the razor blade was Gillette 7 o'clock, I think was the ones we had to buy. And I remember the first attempt at shaving. My face wasn't very good to look at. Oh dear.
Did you make an allowance home to your mother?
Yes. I think, if I remember rightly, I used to send £1 a week home. I think that £1 a week home I used to send until I got a little bit more, and I used to still send money home to my mother. And believe it or not, when I married in Berlin, I still sent money home to my mother, even when I was married. And the girl I married, she was a German girl. I explained the background, and she agreed. I mean, I think I still sent about a pound a week home to my mother.
We were talking there about the equipment that, you know, if you damaged, you was taken from your wage. Was there any stealing? Was that a problem?
Do you know what? I can't remember any stealing at all. I can remember leaving my money on my bed, and I came back, and one of the National Servicemen, who was on about 7 and 6 a week, had put it away and gave me it back, which was amazing, really.
And you've mentioned inspections of your bed, etc. Was there a full kit inspection on a regular basis where you put everything out?
Everything had to go out every morning.
How was it laid?
At the top of the bed, you had 3 blankets and 2 sheets. No, 4 blankets and one sheet and 2 sheets. The top blanket actually used to be wrapped around your other blankets, and they all had to be exactly the same measurement. And we used to have a measurement, and it was from your elbow to the tip of your fingers. That was the measurement. That was so precise. And then that used to be later, and then your pillow was on the top. Pillow on the top or underneath, I can't remember now. Yeah, and your knife, fork and spoon was on the top of that, and all your equipment was laid out in the same manner. You had a plan, and it was all laid out all the way down to the bottom of the bed, and on the bottom of the bed itself, the steel bit, was your weapon, which you put which is your ammunition pouches and so on, but all the rest, the other part of the weapon, which is your 2 packs. You had a large pack, a small pack, and all the other equipment that went with it. That was on the top of your locker. Your civilian clothes was folded up in your locker, and that was open. And everything had to be clean. You weren't allowed any dirty clothing at all in your locker. The only thing that you were allowed to have dirty, and it used to have to be laid out in your locker, was a dirty pair of socks. And the issue you had, I remember distinctly, you had 4 pairs of socks, and they had to be folded up in a certain manner as well. And they had to be exactly the same, each sock laid on top of the other, with the socks that you had on. So you'd have 2 on your bed and 2 which were ready to wash, and you had to wash them that night, otherwise you were in trouble.
And if it wasn't correct in there, did they mess the whole bed up or something? Was it as harsh as that?
Bed used to go over. If it wasn't correct, your bed was tipped over, and an NCO would come round at 8 o'clock that night and make sure it was all laid out on the bed, ready for re-inspection. And that even continued, believe it or not, in the early part of my army career, when it relaxed a little bit, I think in Berlin. At the end of our tour in Berlin, we still had to lay our gear out not every day, but certain days a week.
If one of your members in the hut didn't do something right or wasn't clean, was there a kind of a
blanket punishment
for the whole lot?
Blanket punishment. Everybody, because everybody was supposed to muck in. Obviously, if it was an individual thing, like a lack of discipline, I mean, that was different. Then he would get charged for that. But if it was a joint venture, then everybody got punished. And that helped to build up team spirit, believe it or not. When you were doing section drills, for instance, you never left anybody behind. If anybody was struggling, you went and helped him through. You weren't allowed to take his weapon off him. He had to have control of his own weapon. But if he had a big pack on him, you took his big pack and you helped him right through from start to finish.
We'll come to that element of training, of course. But Can we talk now about the rest of the accommodation? Were you responsible for your own bed space?
Yes. Although you were responsible for your own bed space, if there was anything wrong with anyone else's, and when it was said it was a joint punishment, you had to make sure everybody. So you would go around and help and inspect everybody else's bed space to make sure that everything was up to standard. Because if it wasn't, you all got punished. If you were slept next to a window, you were responsible for cleaning the windows in your bed space, inside and out. And even to the extent where in the barrack room we had joists in various parts. You had to get up on the top and make sure there was no dust on the top of the beams. That was that was discipline.
Where were the ablutions in relation to the
house? They were about, I would say, 100 yards away. And it was, you had the urinals, then you had the toilets themselves. Oh, God, yeah. And there was no lids on them. There was just, if you go think about back to your school days, there was only two, where you sat on the toilet itself, there was maybe two pieces of material. I can't remember where it was now. And that was it. That was the toilets. And as I say, there was no, although each individual toilet had a brush. The showers were in the same block. And there was no privacy. There were just open showers. Hot, if the boilerman, who was a civilian, put some coke in. And they were very rarely hot showers, very rarely. And as I said, and each hut was responsible for each urinal or ablution. So you had your own. There was nobody allowed to use it. So each hut, if I remember rightly, I'm not quite sure whether it was each hut or each platoon, had their own toilets and showers, I think they had, and I think it was the NCO in charge actually gave each person a job to do in the toilets. There might be 2 years doing the showers, 2 years doing the toilets, 2 years doing the urinals. And by God, they had to be immaculate. Otherwise, everybody would be back cleaning them that night.
Were there wash basins, or do you have the tins?
No, there were wash basins. The very, very old wash basins with the hot and cold. But again, if you wanted a hot shave, you had to get down early. If you were late, invariably there was no hot water for a shave. It was that basic. And going through the different various stages of your training, you had a white vest for PE and a red vest for PE, and the old fashioned shorts. Your PE shoes, you were issued them, they were brown, but you had to polish them. Black polish, and they had to shine. And they used to take, when you first got them issued, they used to take about a tin full of polish to actually polish them, and they used to be immaculate and they used to shine. And when you used to go to PE, depending on what part of the training you did, I think you did an hour's PE every day. And when you used to do it, you used to be given 30 seconds to change from your whatever uniform you were in, the fatigues, battle dress, used to be given half an hour. Oh, sorry, 30 seconds to actually get changed, fall in outside again of your barrack room, and march to the gymnasium. You'd have your with a towel with you, because you used to get issued with two towels, and you used to march up to the gym, do various gymnasium, whatever it was on the program. You would get a minute to have a shower, and then you would march or double down to your room, your barrack room, and you would give 30 seconds to get changed in your next phase of your training.
A pretty hectic life.
Very, very hectic.
Can we, whilst we're on this situation, can we go through a typical day in this training element? You know, what time was Reveille?
Reveille was 6 o'clock.
And what immediately was your task after your walk?
The first thing you did was make your bed up. You put your blankets in correct order. Then you would, because the program was always on a board in the room. Well, you would get down and have a hot shower. First thing to make sure that you had a hot shower before your day. Come back, get dressed. A lot of your jobs would have been done the night before, so all your kit would be all folded up, ready. In actual fact, I remember some guys never even getting into bed. They would sleep on the floor rather with a blanket, rather than disturb all the equipment that they had on your bed. Some were that desperate. And then breakfast used to be from 6:30 or 7:15, 7:15 I think it was.
Had you done your cleaning of your rooms, etc., at this stage, or that you had to break first?
No, all your room was all done. Yeah. Everything was done. Then you would go down for breakfast, and in those days, you had to go for breakfast. There was none of this case of, I'd never eat breakfast. You had to have breakfast. And
what might you be given?
You would be bacon, egg, beans, porridge or cornflakes. And it was the same every morning. Every morning.
Was it a cafeteria system? Did you line up and go?
I'm trying to think whether we... I think we actually marched down to the cookhouse. We did. We marched down to the cookhouse with your knife, fork and spoon in your hand. And it was, I'm trying to think, it was in your left hand and it was behind your back. And you would march down to the cookhouse, fall in, and you used to take turns in being first as well. And you used to line up, you would go along, and you would have a bowl and a plate. And I think there were tin bowls and tin plate. I'm sure they were tin, because you had to wash them as well when you'd finished with them. And you would go along, and you would put your plate out for the porridge was just dumped on. And cold milk put on top of it. And the other hand, you would walk along and you would go along and get your egg, which was swimming, and bacon. I think you were allowed 2 pieces of bacon and a dollop of beans. And sometimes you had tomatoes. And you would go over and put it on a table. And the table was 4 mica topped, and there was a wooden chair, and it had a wooden back to it. And then you go over to and get your tea with your mug. So that's right, you issued with a mug as well, a pot mug, not a tin mug, but a pot mug. And I remember, if you broke it, it cost you 2 and 6 pence. Now, if you chipped it, it used to cost you 2 and 6 pence, because you weren't allowed chip mugs. And it always had this funny taste to it, the tea. And I learned later that it had bromide in the tea, and I used to taste
it. Ever tell you why?
Fire. No. At that time, you were too tired to have any sexual thoughts. And I remember, but we did this for 6 weeks. You weren't allowed out of camp. Not at all. Until, I think it was 6 weeks, when you were allowed, I think we were allowed a home visit. You're allowed a week, we got a long weekend off. It wasn't a week's leave, it was a long weekend, so we could go home. If I remember rightly, there was only two or three who didn't come back. National servicemen. And after that, we're allowed to go into Durham, but we weren't allowed out of barracks until 6 o'clock, and we had to be back in barracks at 10 o'clock at night, and we weren't allowed out in civvies. We had to go out in uniform, and there was no shoes issued in those days. There was best boots and anklets, battle dress, belt with the buckles at the front all shine, and the two buckles at the back all shiny, and berry.
And you would have to present yourself to the guardroom, presumably.
Present yourself to the guardroom, walking, making sure that you walked around the square, and you stood at the veranda at the. And you were inspected by the regiment and policemen. And if he thought you weren't good enough to go out, but what you had to do, you had to play crafty. You had to parade at least. You knew what time the bus was going to come from Willington, to go into Durham. So you always give yourself a good time. Because invariably, when you used to go in front of the regiment policeman, which was a guy who. It was always Bob Story, Lance Corporal Story. Scott. Bob Scott. And he would always say, go and do this or whatever, go and get the fluff off your battle dress. And what he used to do, he used to nip round the back of the guard room, not go back, and then present yourself 2 minutes later, and he would always say, that was quick, you're all right to go out. And you always used to just catch the bus. Into Durham.